sounds good. So how did your anger go this week? did anybody notice anything or learn anything this week? It's true. If we're in a high stress period, or you know, we're feeling sick and things, we're much more sensitive, right, to getting angry. Yeah. Anybody else? Sally? Most of us don't. Okay, Joni.
I found it helpful that writing it down is helpful, because then later on when I go and look at it, it doesn't, I mean, I know at the moment I don't like to be angry, but to write about it later, it really shows me how insignificant. I get angry a little bit, so it's frustrating or irritating, and that was mm-hmm. helpful too, that I'm not always angry.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The exercise is saying, am I really angry? Well, no, I'm just frustrated. Mm-hmm. Or am I angry and a little irritated? So identifying exactly what it is, and then also, again, it shows me, and again, I still get angry a lot, and it wasn't fixed, but I'm seeing that this will be a helpful exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Yeah, I mean, keeping the anger log is really a critical part of really becoming, like, understanding our anger, you know, recognizing it instead of just, you know, kind of, you know, forgetting about it afterwards. If we don't know why we got angry, then there's not much we can do about it next time, right? Yeah, so I really encourage everybody to keep the anger log, because we're going to be building on that from week to week. Okay. Anything else? So last week we talked about the disadvantages of anger. What do people think? Are there any good reasons to get angry? Well, actually, maybe I shouldn't ask that question in the question that way. Actually, we'll talk about that later. Okay. Well, the one thing we talked about last week is about how, you know, at first, if you yell at somebody or tell somebody off, you know, they listen to you. But over time, they stop listening to you so much. You know, your angry reaction, people start becoming inured to it and, you know, resistant to it, right? So anger can be expressed outwardly in terms of, you know, snapping at others and yelling at each other. But also we talked about how anger is being extremely displeased about something. So we may also express our anger inwardly, quietly, by like inwardly withdrawing from a person, you know, emotionally withdrawing from a person or a situation, but still maintaining resentment. So there are different ways to express anger. Okay. So we're having a little bit of technical difficulty. So I just wanted to start off by saying that, you know, working with our anger and noticing our anger, it can be quite painful. And so it's really important for us to be very gentle and patient with ourselves through this process and not expect to change overnight, and also not beating ourselves up. Oh, I got irritated 5 times today, and I got irritated. You know, I'm taking this class, and here I'm still getting angry, right? Being hard on ourselves just makes us more prone to anger. Okay. And then I just wanted to talk a little bit about when anger is not constructive and when it can be constructive. Because we talked about that a little bit last week, but I think a lot of people have doubts in general about this. Mm-hmm. So anger in the sense of wanting to harm others, like punish others, is never constructive or useful. It just creates more problems, right? More problematic relationships. Then we regret what we said and all of that. So anger in the sense of wanting to harm is always unconstructive. Whereas when anger can be constructive is if we use the energy of anger, right? When we're angry, you know, we tend to be, that kind of overcomes our fear. You know, maybe we're afraid to say anything to somebody normally, but then when we get angry, we can be courageous and, you know, fight injustice and things like that. So it can be useful to use the energy of anger, but not the wanting to harm them, right? We can use the energy of anger if it's a constructive, right? If we're trying to help somebody. Yeah. And then I didn't get to the recommended reading last time. So there are a few books that I recommend, and this one is called When Anger Hurts, and this one is the primary book I'm using right now in the first few classes, and this is a wonderful book, and this takes kind of a Western psychology anger management kind of approach. Okay, and this is for sale here. And then there's this Working with Anger by Thupten Chodron, who's a Tibetan Buddhist nun. And this is a really, really wonderful and clear book. And she's, you know, so this kind of combines psychology and Buddhism together. And then the Dalai Lama's book, Healing Anger. This is a more traditional Buddhist approach to dealing with anger. Okay. So those three, as well as the Anger Control Workbook, is a workbook. It's the companion workbook to the When Anger Hurts, with exercises and things. And then lastly, for people, No, oftentimes we get angry because we're not able to express what we want or what we need in a constructive way, right, in a peaceful way. And so I recommend this book called Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg, which is wonderful. So we'll get to how to communicate in one of the future classes. We're going to try at least. Okay. All right. So we talked last time about how anger arises, right? So anger is a response to pain, right? We have some sort of pain, physical pain, emotional pain. And then what creates the anger is our resistance to that pain, our thoughts, our negative thoughts that arise in conjunction with that pain, right? So pain by itself doesn't bring anger, and negative thoughts by themselves don't bring anger. It's pain plus negative thoughts together which give rise to anger. So working with our thoughts is really the key to overcoming anger. Okay, so we talked last time about when we're already angry, not to react, right? Not to say something when we're angry, not to write an email when we're angry, etc. But just to be mindful, notice the thoughts and the feelings, etc. And then to take a time out if we need it, right? If somebody's in our face and we're getting angry, it's good to just take some distance, right, for a while. And then while we're away, not to feed our angry thoughts, not to rehearse or ruminate about all of the wrongs that have been done to us, but to try to counteract the anger. And then once we've calmed down, then we're better able to resolve the problem. I'm going to skip this. So some antidotes to try in general. So if we're already angry, we can try repeating to ourselves, it's not personal, it's not about me. Like if somebody's rude to me, you know, usually I think, okay, well, you know, I didn't deserve that. Why did that happen to me, right? And oftentimes they're just having a bad day, right? It's not about us, right? So we can use a coping thought. It's not personal. It's not about me. Or people are people. Why get mad? Right? Oftentimes we expect that people should be perfect, but they aren't, right? People aren't perfect. So we can try that coping thought. Or he probably didn't do it deliberately. Oftentimes we get angry because we think that they did it purposely to us. Right? So these are just some coping thoughts to try. Okay, so one of the critical things we need to do in order to counteract our anger is to notice when our irritation or anger is starting to arise. So we can notice in terms of thoughts and in terms of body sensations. So what are some body sensations that people notice when they get angry? What happens? Flushed. Thank you. some negative thoughts that we noticed arise that trigger our anger?
It's not fair.
Yeah.
Just a replaying of something that's happened. The reruns are just as bad as the premiere.
Rerunning the good things?
Rerunning the anger. You know, like this, and I learned this technique where instead of like the whole scenario of he did this and then they did that and da da da, that you just label it as that episode, that whatever, so that when it comes up, you start thinking, you know, okay, I know that whole scene.
Mm-hmm.
But just thinking about it again, okay, I got angry when it happened. That would be, if I could just like limit it there and not go back.
Exactly.
For things that have happened years ago that, you know, that you're not really mad at anymore.
Well,
it's just still there.
Right, but we recreate it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Through thinking about it again and again and again and again. I remember when my mom and dad separated, my mom was telling me things that my dad did when my older brother was born, 40 years before then. When I was in the hospital, you know, and she was getting really irate, you know, and it wasn't real at all anymore. It was only real in her mind,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's a replaying everything that person did wrong, what they said, that causes the anger to escalate. You know, even if we weren't that angry in the beginning, you
yes.
know, then, you know, and then the next day, oh, but he shouldn't have done that. Or if our friend tells us, oh, well, that, you know, that was completely out of line. You should tell him off. You know, that can trigger our anger even more, even if we weren't even that angry in the beginning. Yeah, so it's our thinking. It's our thinking really that creates the anger. And when we really get that, then we really want to counteract it. We understand that we can counteract it, right? Because it's just our thought. What else?
Well, if you expect someone's behavior is going to change and it doesn't.
Yeah. What is the negative thought there?
Why don't they change? Why don't they? Why don't they?
I don't.
Or I thought they would.
Okay.
If they were more like me.
Okay. If they were more like me.
Who does he think he is?
Yeah.
How dare she?
How could they?
Anything else people notice?
I say like immediately I don't like somebody. I'm like, you know, I put like a judgment on them. I don't like that person. And it's like,
right.
But don't you think anger is saying the worst kind of anger? And saying more of the people that you're close to?
Usually it is. Not always, but usually. It's somebody that, you know, that can hurt us, really. And it disappoints us. You know, we have high expectations of them and they don't meet them. Okay. Any other negative thoughts that people notice? Okay. So this is important for each of us to notice for ourselves. What are our thoughts that we keep running through our head? What are our body sensations that trigger us? Oh, I'm getting angry. You know, I need to breathe. I need to calm down. Because the key right to anger management is noticing your impatience and your irritation before it turns into anger. So the anger escalation curve I talked about last time, right? So it starts off as being just impatience and irritation, but it's our negative thoughts that cause it to escalate into anger and rage, right? So the more we feed our negative thoughts, like Leslie was saying, the more we rerun what happened, the negatives that happened, how wrong they were, how unfair they were, how mistreated we were, the more we think in those terms, think negatively, the more our anger is going to increase. Yeah? So a little irritation can turn into anger through negative thinking. Right? So the key is to catch it right early. Anger management is really working at these levels to catch it early and to counteract those negative thoughts. Because those negative thoughts, right, are actually not accurate reflections of reality. So we'll talk more about that. So we know it's a negative thought or a trigger thought, triggering anger, if the thought makes us more agitated. I'm already irritated. If I keep thinking in a particular way, I become more and more agitated. Oh, and then, not only did he do that, but then he said blah, blah, blah. And then he turned away and blah, blah, blah. Right? Those kinds of thoughts that agitate us even more are the thoughts that we need to counteract. So the higher we go up on the escalation curve, the more self-righteous we become. We're convinced, you know, I'm right and he's totally wrong, right? Psychologists speak of a refractory period that accompanies an emotion. So during this time, we are closed to any advice or reasonable interpretation that contradicts our view. We can neither think clearly about a situation nor accept other interpretations of it that well-meaning people offer. So really, like at these points, we can't think clearly. We don't want to hear anything reasonable that anybody says, right? Because we're so caught up in our anger, right? And the refractory period may be short, just a few seconds, or it may last years and years and even decades. But when the emotion subsides and we're able to look at the event more clearly, we readily see that anger's interpretation was inaccurate. Right, so this is another good thing about logging our anger, right? That filling out our anger log, because at the moment we're angry, we're totally convinced that we're right and they're wrong. And then later on we'll look at it and think, okay, well, what was I getting so upset about? You know, it was just, the guy just cut me off on the road. It wasn't life and death situation, right? It was no big deal, right?
Oh, yeah.
But at the time, it was a disaster, right? If we got really angry. Yeah. All right. So this thing says, then there's letting go of our anger. How do we let go of our anger? By applying antidotes, by applying thoughts that counteract these negative thoughts. Right? So we'll talk more about these antidotes. Or just letting go. Oh, well, this is no big deal. What are you getting so upset about? You know, and just letting it go. Like truly letting it go, as opposed to just repressing it. Right? Repressing it. Oh, I'm still ticked off at him, but whatever, you know, I'll just go on with my day. If that, you know, if we do that, we're not truly letting go of the anger, we're holding on to resentment. Because the next time they do it, then we'll get even more angry. So we'll know if it's a good antidote or a coping thought if it calms us down. Right? So the negative thoughts, the anger trigger thoughts, make us more agitated, increase our anger. If it's a thought that's an antidote, it helps calm us down. It's like, oh, you know, he didn't mean it, or he's just doing his best. You know, our heart starts to slow down, you know, the heat stops coming into our face, you know, gradually. eventually, you know, we start to let go. But if we're harboring resentment, you know, so we get angry, and then, you know, if we stop feeding our angry thoughts, our negative thoughts, then this curve, you know, our anger intensity will definitely go down. But if we haven't truly let go of the anger, then we stay at a particular level, right? We may stay up here, we may stay here, just waiting for the next incident, right? Like the person, you know, our partner, our kids who are constantly doing the same things, right? They never pick up after themselves, right? Or whatever, you know, they say they're going to do something, but they don't. Oftentimes we stay at this level, right? Because it's still irritating us. We may not be at the super angry level all the time, but we're not at the zero level, right? There's the, you know, all of the history and all of the baggage, which, you know, if we haven't let go of it, so we constantly stay at a particular level, you know, if it's at a level of irritation or impatience. Or as Leslie was saying earlier, you know, you feel like you're in an irritated state. Right, so we go through these periods, you know, when we have a lot of stress or we have, you know, a lot of things going on and we can't really calm down, then we tend to stay, you know, at this level as opposed to at the zero level. And so what happens over time is, okay, I didn't really let it go. I didn't try to counteract my interpretation of what happened. So I go down here, and then it happens again. And then I get even angrier next time, right? And then it goes down, but then it stays at a higher level, and then I get even angrier and angrier, right? So this is what happens if we don't truly try to counteract our negative thinking. If we're just like, oh, you know, if we're endure it kind of people, I'll just endure it, you know? But we don't actually challenge our negative thinking. Okay. So we need to apply the antidotes in order to truly let go of the anger. We can't just ignore the problems and pretend that everything is fine, because then we hang on to the resentment, we hang on to grudges, and in the future we'll get even more angry, and very quickly. So antidotes help us to cope. So I already talked about this. And in general, I find the most useful antidote in my life is loving kindness and compassion, right? Looking at the other person's perspective, right? Because anger is very much focused on my perspective, what happened to me in general. So the more we care about the other person's perspective, like instead of immediately getting angry, thinking, okay, well, why did he do that? Oh, you know, well, maybe he's just really stressed right now. He's going through a really difficult time. Oh, okay. You know, if I don't care about that person and I try to look at their perspective, then I think, oh, he's stressed. Well, too bad. That's not my problem. Right? But if I care about that person and I see that they're going through a hard time, then I'm more able to let go of my anger, right? What do people think of that? We're all deluded. That's the thing. Yeah, and that's actually an even better reason to be compassionate toward them, right? Because it's not that they're perfect people who are purposely hurting me and being rude to me and inconsiderate to me, but there are people who have these habits, right? These habits, and they can't help it. Right? So when we really understand, just like we can't help it, sometimes when we get angry or irritated, I know I shouldn't get angry, but I can't help it, right? Others are the same way; they can't help. help it. You know, they're being driven by their habits, right? So this takes time, right, and practice. Okay. So I wanted to put this slide up. Okay, so we're more likely, in our lives, we're more likely to get angry if we tend to focus on the negative, on what's wrong. You know, it's the whole kind of half glass half full or glass half empty approach. If we tend to see the upsides of a situation, if we tend to see, okay, well, yeah, you know, he forgot to do the dishes today. But in general, he's really good about helping around the house. He mows the lawn, right? So he doesn't do the dishes. If we're just focused on the fact that he never does the dishes, then we get irritated. But if we have a wider perspective of, oh, well, but there are these good aspects as well, then we're less likely to get angry. Secondly, if we tend to blame, it's his fault. Anyway, we're going to talk about blame later. So if we have a tendency to blame, we're more likely to get angry. If we're very attached to shoulds, people should know better. People should drive more carefully. People should listen to me when I talk, right? People should, respect my needs. People should act in a particular way. The more we're attached to shoulds, the more angry we're going to get if they act in contradiction to the way I think they should act. Yeah. So we're going to talk more about that one today. If we lack communication skills, if we need something and we aren't able to express that, then we're more likely to keep resentment inside. Right? He should know what I want without me telling him. If we tend to repress our emotions and needs, we pretend we don't have them, and then later on we end up blowing up because it's a pressure cooker has built up inside us. If we're very averse to pain, right? So anger is a response to pain, right? So if we think, I should never get hurt, I should never, painful things should never happen, I should never get sick, I should never blah, 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 then I'll react strongly when I do experience pain. If I struggle against painful emotions and feelings of vulnerability, instead of just accepting that painful emotions, feeling vulnerable, are part of life, part of opening our hearts, then we're less likely to get angry. But if I think that person shouldn't, they shouldn't have hurt me, or this shouldn't have happened, then I'm more likely to get angry. If we're generally suspicious and distrustful of others, so we immediately assume the worst of somebody. Like I was talking to one woman once who said, you know what really makes me angry is when men open the door for me. I just kind of looked at her. And she said, that just shows that he's disrespectful, and I just thought. That's her being generally distrustful and suspicious of others' motives, right? Assuming a negative motive, right? I mean, we all have things like that, right? It might not be people opening the door for us, but, this person doesn't call when they say that they're going to call. Oh, well, they're just being inconsiderate and they don't care about me at all, right? Or it might be, oh, actually, they're caught in a meeting, or they're in the middle of something and they aren't able to call, right? But if we jump to the negative conclusion automatically, then we're more likely to get angry. So we're going to go into all of these things in greater and lesser degrees throughout this class. If we think in terms of black and white, thinking I'm 100% right and he is 100% wrong, right? If we think in those terms, we're more likely to get angry. We're not willing to see that there's some validity to what the other person is doing or saying. Because there are very few situations in life, right, where we're really 100% right and they're 100% wrong. If we tend to magnify the harm and wrong done, like, oh, he always does that. He never listens to me. Right? If we magnify it, we're more likely to get angry. That's a good one, too. That if we're generally insecure and we're trying to cover that up, I think that would be struggling against painful emotions. So, yeah, there's a lot of things included in that one. Fear, insecurity, feeling bad about ourselves, things like that. There's more. So we're more likely to get angry if we're unwilling to see or understand the other's perspective.
Sorry,
there's a second page. So we're unwilling to see or understand the other's perspective. So we're totally convinced that, you know, of our perspective and don't even want to hear what the other person has to say. Right? So a lot of these wars between nations, you know, we're right, and the Al-Qaeda, they're 100% wrong. They have no valid complaints at all, right? We're 100% right. If we're very stressed or exhausted, right, then we tend to be more easily triggered to anger. I didn't get a good night's sleep and somebody looks at me the wrong way, I can get irritated, right? But if I'm well rested and somebody looks at me the wrong way, I think, oh, well, whatever, right? Or very stressed, new mothers, right? I think are dealing with this all the time, right? Very stressed. Exhausted, not getting enough sleep, so we're demands being constantly put on you. If we're a perfectionist, okay, we're more likely to get angry because if people don't meet our standards. Yeah, Marcella. Yeah, yeah, exactly. All of these. Everything on this list is we suffer more. Yeah. If we lack problem-solving skills. So, yeah, so if we're constantly focused on the past and what was wrong and not focused on, well, how can I make this better? How can we, how can I meet my needs better? Then we're more likely to be angry. If we're very demanding and forceful in pursuing our goals, right, and impatient with others who get in our way, right, we're more likely to be angry. If we're very attached to control, like I need to have everything in my life needs to be in control, but the thing is, right, in life, we can't control others, right? We can't control external circumstances. We can only sometimes control ourselves, right? So if we need to be in control, then we're likely to get easily frustrated and angry. If we're very attached to being right. So oftentimes in relationships we have this choice. We can hang on to being right and arguing until the other person agrees that I'm right. Or I can let go and think, okay, well, let's find a peaceful solution. So do you want to be right? Or do you want to have peace and harmony? Right, so this is a critical choice that we need to make. If we're more focused on being right, and the other person admitting that they're wrong, right, then I'm not going to have a very peaceful relationship. Right? If we take the wrong kinds of drugs, right, that's pretty self-explanatory. That can trigger our anger. If we feel helpless or powerless, right? So we see this a lot, right, in these difficult economic times. You know, I need a job, but I can't find a job. There are no jobs out there, right? Or, you know, all of these people with the oil spill who, you know, have lost their livelihoods. You know, you're much more likely, right, to get angry. If we tend to ruminate a lot about the wrong done and the harm that was done, right? We think about it again and again as we replay it, like we were saying before. Or if we're very attached to anything, if I, you know, to my reputation or respect or my opinions, money. If we're very attached to anything, if we're denied it, we're likely to get angry. If I'm really attached to people treating me with respect, then when people treat me with disrespect, I get angry. Right? I'm very attached to financial security, and then, you know, somebody steals money from me, get angry. Right? If I'm very attached to my car and somebody scratches it, right? How are we doing so far? All right. So how anger arises. So as we were saying, it starts with a painful feeling. So we'll talk a little bit about these painful feelings. Painful emotions, physical pain, frustrated desire or attachment, or harm or threat. We'll talk about. So painful emotions. You know, hurt, fear, guilt, low self-worth. So what you were saying earlier, Karen? Feeling of helplessness or powerlessness, right? So oftentimes, right, we get angry in order to cover up these painful emotions. Right? We don't feel comfortable with these emotions, so, you know, anger gives us a feeling of power. Physical pain, where you can get angry because, you know, I'm just tired of having a backache and, you know, my legs hurt and I'm tired all the time. Right? And then frustrated desire or attachment. Really, I think that all anger can be included under this one. Not getting what we want, or encountering exactly what we don't want, or feeling forced, etc. So, as I was saying last time, anger can be is a response to the ego not getting what it wants. Okay? Anger is a response to the ego not getting what it wants. Right? So something we really, really want or need for our happiness. Our happiness is dependent on getting this. When we're denied it, we're more likely to get angry. Yeah. Or harm or threat. You know, feeling falsely accused or cheated betrayed, etc. All can trigger anger. Right? So anger, psychologists often say anger is like a secondary emotion, right? It's, you know, the real emotion to deal with are the painful emotions, right, that lie underneath the anger. So using anger as a response to pain may or may not give us a short-term payoff. So if I get angry and I yell at somebody, you know, maybe they'll do what I want in the short term, right? But in the long term, it's not effective, right? As we saw last time, in the long term, I'm damaging relationships with others, and in the long term, people don't want to be around me. People start avoiding me, and you know, may on the surface do what I want, but in the background may kind of try to sabotage what I really want. Yeah. So we need to find an alternative strategies for dealing with pain and meeting our needs, right? Because if anger, right, anger does get us what we want sometimes, right? So in order to counteract that anger, you know, and find more constructive ways to deal with things, we need to find an alternative, a constructive way to meet our needs, right? So first we have to understand what those needs are, right? What is it that I'm really wanting that I'm being denied, right? Why am I getting angry? Oh, it's because I need more attention, right? I need this person to spend more time with me, or I need more respect, right? I need more appreciation. Because anger won't get you more appreciation. Anger won't get you more respect. Well, anger might get you attention, but maybe not the kind of attention you really want, right? So if we can find other more constructive ways to deal with what it is that we really want and need, then we won't have, you know, the fuel for anger. Joe. Exactly.
Like if I realize that person is missing something or needing something or hurting and responding in this way that is delusional because it's not going to get them what they want, that's another layer of to be compassionate. That's really
yeah.
What's in the door for me right now.
Great. I mean, exactly. And that's how we develop compassion for people who do destructive things. This is understanding that they're only doing that because they're feeling pain. They're hurting. And they're not knowing how to deal with that, right? They're not knowing how to get what they want.
Yeah.
Or they're not even conscious of it. Yeah. So this is what we're going to focus on today, is trying to understand what is underneath our anger. Are you ready for a break? Well, the rest of the class, we're going to be dealing with this. So actually, now is a good stopping point. So why don't we take a break, and we'll come back in about 5 minutes. Gina, hi, it's nice to meet you. Oh yeah, thanks for coming. Well, here is our email list, so I can send you the materials for the class.
I read everything that Leslie sent over, and it was just like light bulbs just kept going off, and I was like, I need to be there.
Well, great. Have you been here before?
No, ma'am, it's my first time.
Yeah, I know you've talked about that. A stressful environment, that's... Everybody's more relaxed. Yeah, that's difficult. Okay, so let me make sure. Good girl Jin. Oh,
good
Gina.
Gina.
Okay. Let's get good girl Jin. You like your bottle.
Too strong.
Yeah, no need to.
I have to do this little circle crawl around the floor until I find, but no, I've been doing PT for my Achilles tendon. And so then I figured out my hip joint level, which I always knew. And so then they worked on that. And so now we're finding all other, I mean, it's just like more and more new things.
You have so many things happening with your body. Well,
that's why I was laying in bed when I was trying to take a nap. I'm like thinking of just different things, and being pissed off about the washing machine took me back to, made me think of like 20 years ago, of some incident that I'm not mad about it anymore, but when I got really angry about a washing machine thing, I'm like, my whole shit is gone. And I've gone through a lot of bad karma already before you even met me, and I'm like, barely snuck into this life, you know, into the human thing, and then find the Mahayana, but it had to wait, you know, it had to be like 50 years old before I could find it, and, you know, it's like, so that's the only thing that keeps me sane, is going back to like, yeah, this is, or crap from this lifetime that you...
Aren't you just purifying,
oh, yeah,
you know?
And there's purification every night, and it just, you know, it's like, I gotta admit, they are annoying things that could be, you know, they're not too terrible. Like this pit that I moved into.
This pit? I guess you don't like your new place? Leslie! Out of it, what we really want, right, is the problem. Like, if I really want people to love me and care about me, then anger is the exact opposite thing to do, right? To get to feel close to others. Yeah, but we do still, you know, there are still anger payoffs. We, you know, have anger payoffs.
That's pretty consistent.
Uh-huh, go ahead.
I was just thinking that's consistent with how we behave in other areas. I think we're very much wired for short-term gratifications. A million things we do that maybe have some short-term or immediate payoff, but we know are not good for us in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
I think anger just seems more automatic and more natural and less of a choice than some of the other things that we would label as like habits or bad behavior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Gina?
Holding up the line. So finally, when we got to like the fourth time,
Well, you know, I mean, there are instances where it is useful, right, to raise our voice or to be very assertive. And but the anger part of it, you know, being agitated, being frustrated, being, you know, irritated, that's the part that's not, right, so useful. And you can see it disturbed your mind and you felt bad about having gotten irritated, right? So that's the downside. But the thing is, you still got what, something out of it, right? you know, they opened up another register, right? So through training, though, we can learn how to, you know, to right wrongs, or, you know, how to affect, you know, positive behavior, right, through not getting angry, right? Because not getting angry is a more effective way. But it's more difficult. That's the other thing. It's easier to just get angry and yell, right? But it's more difficult to stay calm and find a more constructive way to express ourselves, right? We need to learn, right? Because our anger, right? I mean, our anger responses are a result of our habitual patterns and what we learned, right, growing up. Like, in my family, if you wanted something, you didn't talk through it. You yelled, you know, you got angry, right? And so that was the only thing that I knew how to do, right? So it's taking a long time to learn more constructive ways to communicate. Yeah. There was a hand in the back. What do other people think of that? Janet.
I think that, and I don't know your name, but Gina. I think Gina is the best judge of her internal feelings about the whole thing. And I think that either way, you can say the same words with that irritation, or you can say the same words without the irritation. So I think that's the key. I mean, for me, I have to look at how my feelings are, no matter what words I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So the internal feelings of feeling agitated, you know, irritated and things, I mean, that unsettles us, right? We're not calm. It, you know, makes us unhappy and things. So if we can remain undisturbed and calm and peaceful, and still, you know, say something so because other people are being disturbed, right? That's the ideal world, right? It takes a while to get there. Okay. So your name was Pamela, right? Mm-hmm. Pamela, what do you think about that?
Well, I was in a situation similarly today where I waited endlessly for a prescription. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that situation had been happening with me. And they didn't have another register. They were being very inefficient and taking notes. And all of the people, they had a line going out the door. They actually had, you know, it was just incredibly delaying for everybody and a lot of older people who were disabled and everything like that. And it was very painful for me to stand for 40 minutes too.
Wow.
And the back problem.
Wow.
And so I'm very sympathetic to your situation, and I think that, you know, way to facilitate movement and efficiency and things like that, if you can calmly say it and make for some progress, I don't see any problem. I'm sympathetic to your situation. Because I think that there's a lot of very irresponsible people around, and, you know, if you don't say anything or do anything, then, of course, nothing gets done. And stuff and say things, and a lot of times I get negative feedback from it, and sometimes I get very positive feedback from it. So that I'm just somebody who says what I think.
Okay, Joe. Right. Okay. All right. And who else had? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So this gets back to what I was saying earlier in the class about, you know, if the motivation, right, is to help somebody, then the energy of anger can be beneficial, right? If our motivation is to teach them a lesson, right, to punish them, to hurt them, then it's not beneficial for anybody. It's not beneficial for yourself, and it's not beneficial for them, right? Mm-hmm. So we can use the energy of anger if we're not, you know, in a constructive way, in a beneficial way. And sometimes we need to, right? But wanting to harm someone, there's just nothing useful about that. Right? And that tortures ourselves more than anybody, wanting someone to be harmed, wanting someone to be punished. Now that's what hurts us more than anyone. Okay, so think about that. And I can see that you don't agree with me, or some of you don't agree with me, but think about that. Yeah. Okay. Was there a hand? Jeremy, did you have a hand? Sally, did you have a?
Oh, yeah, I didn't have my hand up. I'm just thinking, though, that I get really angry when I see those stop signs. And as soon as as soon as the line turns green, the person behind me starts honking.
Mm-hmm.
It really makes me angry. So then I honk back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wonder if I, is that road rage?
Could be, yeah.
I get really angry, you know, when they do that.
Uh-huh. Does anger help?
No, I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like how angry I get.
Yeah.
And then I'll honk at them. And then usually I pull over to the side and I'll go by and I'll honk again. I get really mad. I get really angry.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that segues nicely into this next section. On so we're going to talk about these negative thoughts. So some common themes of negative thoughts. Shoulds. People shouldn't honk at me right when the light turns green, right? Or I'll get angry, right? So we all tend to have these kind of rules of the universe that we expect others to follow. And if they don't follow them, then I am very righteously angry, right? I am completely right in being angry because they didn't follow my rules of the universe.
I have secret muni etiquette. No.
Uh-huh.
Like a whole system of muni etiquette, but nobody really knows it. Follows it.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. We have an endless list, right? The right way. I mean, the one that makes me really, really amuses me that most people have who have a dishwasher is the right way to load the dishwasher, right? Like, is that an important issue in life? No, but it's like you go to somebody's house and you're kind of afraid to load the dishwasher for them because you might not do it the right way, right? The way that they want you to do it. And what happens, right, is then people don't help you, right? Like a friend of mine, you know. Yeah. So anyway, so shoulds. We're gonna get into shoulds. So shoulds, blaming, assumptions, catastrophizing, labeling the person rather than the behavior, and overgeneralizing. So we'll get into the shoulds today. So it's good to have a healthy sense of values and, right, guidelines for life. But they become unconstructive if we're attached to them and judge and impose them on others, right? It's good to, you know, to take care of the environment and be kind to each other and do things in the right way, right? But if I'm judging others based on my set of rules, then it becomes unconstructive and aggressive. And the more strongly attached to shoulds we are, the more angry we'll become when they're violated. So our shoulds are exactly that, our shoulds, right? Our rules. And everybody has a unique set of shoulds. Based on how they were brought up, based on their education, based on their experience, based on their culture. So based on their own wants and needs, etc. So this is the problem with shoulds, is that others don't necessarily agree with our shoulds. You know, how can we impose our rules of the universe on others? You know, most of the time they don't think that they're doing anything wrong. They're following their own rules, right? So if we're getting angry when other people violate our shoulds, we're just frustrating ourselves for, you know, we're just creating frustration and suffering and difficulty for ourselves in our lives. You know, because people are just going to do things the way that they feel is the best, right? We don't need to impose what we think is right on others. Like the woman I was telling you about, how who gets angry when men open the door for her. You know, that's an extreme example, right? But we do these things, right? We assume that other people know and agree with my rules, and they're violating them, and oftentimes they're violating them on purpose, right? We think, right? They know this guy knows he shouldn't honk, you know, at the traffic light, you know, but maybe he grew up in India, and the thing is, in India, you honk to be polite. Like in this culture, you honk, like honking is rude. In India and in many countries around the world, you honk just to warn people that you're there. Like, it's a considerate thing to do. So you walk down the street and people are constantly honking everywhere, you know? But it's like, boo, honk, 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 because people are driving on the wrong side of the street, and honk, 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 I'm here, honk, honk, honk. And, you know, and so if we think honking is absolutely bad, then we get angry at somebody who honks, but they have a completely different understanding of what honking means. You know, I'm just trying to warn you, right?
I always thought we should have two horns.
Yes. A lot of times I'm but I don't want to be rude.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It would be just like a safety, you know.
Yeah.
Just stand here.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do that sometimes too, you know, like if somebody is on the highway and straying into my lane and almost hitting me. You know, sometimes I honk a little bit. It's
right.
Like, Maybe you're falling asleep. Maybe you're on the cell phone and you're endangering yourself and others. You know, so, but if I honk, I know that they might get mad at me, you know, because they think I'm, you know, I'm being obnoxious. But actually, my motivation is to help them wake up, you know, stay in your lane. You know, so that's the other problem with shoulds, is we're assuming the other person has a bad motivation. Assuming he's honking because he's, you know, he's being rude to me, right? So some examples. So some common themes: entitlement. I'm entitled to being treated a particular way. I'm entitled to a certain standard of living. I'm entitled to be left alone when I want to be alone, kind of thing. Perfectionism. There's a right way of doing things, and my way is the right way. Right, my right way of running a meeting. There's a right way of running a household. There's a right way of raising kids. There's a right way. You know, there isn't one right way. There are many different ways. Right, and so the more we're attached to my way of doing things as being right, the more likely we're going to get angry. Yeah? So one exercise in anger management is letting go of our shoulds. Okay, well they have their rules, I have my rules. There's no reason to get upset when people don't follow my rules of the universe.
Just 'cause they're wrong.
They're wrong, but I'll let them be wrong. Yeah. Or fairness. Fairness is another theme of shoulds. So examples. Others should treat me with respect and consideration. And if they don't, you know, I'm entitled to get angry. Others should help me and be attentive to my needs. People should know what I need without my telling them. It's surprising how many people have this one. You should know. Others should appreciate me and what I do. Others should change to meet my needs. People shouldn't be selfish. People shouldn't drive slowly in the fast lane. People shouldn't be so demanding. People should take care of the environment. People should do things the right way, my way. Life should be fair. Right? Is life fair? Yeah, so there, you know, so why get angry when it's not? Because it just isn't. Why get angry? You know, I mean, a lot of practicing patience is about just accepting the way things are. You know? It doesn't mean we don't try to do something when there are injustices, you know, but to not struggle against what is. You know, okay, well, you know, this thing happened whether we're happy about it or not. So why be, you know, why be angry about it? You know, the oil spill happened, right? I can be really angry about it. I can accept it and try to do something constructive with it. But getting angry about it isn't going to help, right? And it makes me miserable. Sanskrit is not, I don't know,
but
Sanskrit,
it,
yeah.
As
just
are,
as it is, yeah.
As
it is. I think it means, I would be speculating. I mean, okay. I know very little about it, but I think it's as it is. So the question was the meaning of tayata.
Oh, I heard it.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All okay. Right. Okay.
I was going to ask you if you knew.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's a question for Geshe-la. But I don't know if that's the meaning of the word, but in Buddhism that's largely, you know, that's a lot of what Buddhism is about is accepting. Yeah. should have known better. People should be punished for hurting me or others. So there's so many shoulds. What other shoulds do we have in life? People should.
I had a one in the bathroom. I was like, somebody should change the toilet paper when they're done. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, like, maybe they didn't notice it was out. I just couldn't really see. You know, maybe I just got the last piece. So
mm-hmm.
I just caught myself.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. We have those all day long, right? Our shoulds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or people should have put the toilet paper with the roll the other way. Yeah. It's not supposed to go down, you know, because then the cat. Yeah. I mean, it's humorous, right, how many shoulds that we have in life on things that aren't even important, right? But they're just a result of how we were brought up, yeah? How we were trained, but that's not the right way of doing things. It's like anyone who's had a close relationship with anyone sees that they view life in a very different way than we do, and they do things in a very different way than we do. So if we struggle against that and try to get them to do things our way, we're creating a lot of suffering and drama for ourselves, right? So, you know, it's a much more peaceful way to live if we just accept, okay, well, there's another way of doing things. It doesn't mean mine's not any better or worse. It's just different, yeah? And just accepting other alternative ways of doing things. Yeah? This is a big one in our lives.
People should walk on the right.
So people are going to do what they do, right? So
yeah.
Why get upset about it? Yeah. Unless we could change, like if we could change everybody, then, you know, then life would be good, right? But we can't, you know, we can't change others, you know? And the more we have respect for the way others do things, the more peaceful our lives are, right? Because we tend to think, okay, well, my way is right, but everybody thinks that their way is right, right? So just respecting, okay, well, their way is just as valid as mine, and it's just as important as mine, right?
Sometimes I have to kind of take a step back and be like, you know what, there's no law that says that
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have a way to get there, you
mm-hmm.
know, that's that convenient, that, you know, it wasn't always this way. So, you know, it's hard to do that in the moment, but I think this should also extend beyond, like, interpersonal
definitely.
Habits, but
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I remember, I mean, I remember when I first moved to Italy, you know, their set of shoulds is totally different from my, you know, ours here. And I mean, I've talked about this before, right? The store, there are no 24-hour stores there. You know, there is no such thing. Stores are open from like 9 to 12 and like 3 to 7 or 8.
Yeah.
In the evening. And so I remember getting there and thinking, this is wrong, you know? At lunchtime, I should be able to go to the store at lunchtime when I have time. What do you mean the stores are closed at lunchtime? The post office is closed at lunchtime, and it's not open on the weekend, so when are people supposed to go to the post office, right? You know, and it's just like, that's just the way they do things, right? You know, so we have this like sense of entitlement and the sense of expectation that there should always be a store open 24 hours a day. You know, the Safeway or something should be open 24 hours a day, right? Or, I'll get upset, right? Because I have to get, you know, I have to buy things exactly when I want to, right? I can't wait, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, things should be efficient. Like if anybody's been to India,
right.
You just have to let go of that or else you're upset all the time, right?
Yeah.
Things are just at a different pace. Things are done in a different way. And we think, okay, well, our way is better than theirs. But who's to say our way is better than theirs? They're less stressed out than we are. So, you know, maybe their way is better than ours, you know, who knows? So there are different ways of doing things and different valid ways of doing things. And the more that we can open up to that and respect that, the more, you know, even keeled we'll be. Yeah. Joni. Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
should never wear cowboy boots with a summer dress. You should never wear black tights with white shoes.
Yep.
And I realize when I see young women do that now,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, you shouldn't do that.
Yep. Yep.
But everybody
yep.
does it except me.
Right.
And so it's like I
yep.
do, I literally get irritated when I see women wear cowboy boots with summer dress. So that's how
yeah.
I am.
Oh, but
that,
I, yeah.
I
yep.
Yeah. I did. It's a huge shift for me. Fashion
yep.
stuff.
And those were, you know, and those were your mother's rules. You know, the next door neighbor, you know, might have had a different set of rules, right? So, yeah, so a lot of these shoulds are unconscious, and we uncover them. Like, anger and irritation helps us uncover them, right? Like, oh, I didn't even know that, you know, I judge people for wearing, you know, whatever, you know, too much hairspray or, you know, whatever it is, you know? And maybe they don't think it's important. Yeah. And maybe they decided it wasn't important, you know. Right. So the more we can let go of our shoulds, you know, imposing our shoulds on others and judging others, the more we'll be able to let go of our anger and irritation. Okay, so there's There are three ways that we can handle shoulds in a constructive way. The first one, which I think is the best way, is just to accept people as they are and not to expect them to change. That's but sometimes, you know, we're in a relationship with someone and we really need them to stop leaving their clothes all over the floor, right? Or it's I don't know, it's a situation, you know, where there's harm being done and you need to help somebody understand, right, how to do things better, right? Or at work somebody's a new hire and they don't know how to do things, and you know, so we help them learn how to do things in a way that's more efficient or whatever. So a second option is helping them change, right? Helping them learn, right? So this is a tricky one, right? So first of all, if we're going to do this, it's more effective to do it in a positive way, right? In a constructive way, right? In reinforcing them in a positive way. Yelling at them for, you know, screwing up the accounts, you know, is not going to be very effective, right? So if we think about how often have we changed because somebody yelled at us? You know, not very often, right? That's not the most effective way to help me change, right? But if people, you know, others reinforce me to change, you know, help me, you know, are very positive and encouraging, then I'm more likely to, you know, do what others want me to do, right? So similarly, if we're gonna try to affect change in the world and in others, then we need to do it in a positive, constructive way. That's the most effective way, at least. And then the third option is to leave, right? If I can't stand my job and I'm constantly getting angry, and you know, and my boss is constantly a jerk, and you know, I can accept it. I can talk to my boss about it, or I can leave, get another job, right? We have these three options. Generally, we have these three options. Sometimes we don't have all of these options, but in general, we have a choice, right? So one thing that often brings up anger is that we feel forced, we feel trapped, we feel like there's nothing I can do, and we just point blame, right? But for most of us, and in most situations, we do have a choice. You know, my partner's driving me crazy. Well, it was your choice to be in this relationship. You don't have to be in this relationship. You can choose to leave, right? And you know, that helps dissipate the anger. Yes, Janet.
One of the things, and it's not on all of my kids, but on some of my kids, I find that occasionally, even though I have this should, that I even do it myself, either by accident or by mistake or I misjudge something. And so sometimes when the shoulds come up in relationship to someone else, I can give them a little slack because I realize that sometimes I did it myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Somebody that stopped at an intersection when they don't have the right turn blinker on, or you can't see the people that are crossing the street in front of the big truck, and you go beep beep beep, and then all of a sudden you see the little heads going by, and you go, oh, dude, that feels good.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I did that, and I hate it when they do that to mm-hmm. me.
Yep.
You know, so
yep. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, being honest with, okay, well, I do that too. I'm not perfect either. I, you know, I do things that I don't agree with. That's a really, really useful, you know, thing to remember, you know. I mean, on the road, it's, you know, that's very common. You know, we all do these things. Oh, you know, I merged into the lane at the last minute, you know, and cut somebody off. Well, I get irritated if other people do that, but I've done that too, you know. So, right. So some antidotes to the shoulds: accepting that people aren't perfect and they're driven by their own wants, needs, and values, right? People are doing what they do for a reason. They're trying to meet their own needs, you know? And that's just the way people are, you know? We need to accept that. We're not, you know, if we expect others to put our needs ahead of theirs, well, we're going to be frustrated. Yeah. So accepting. Remembering the positives, their good qualities, and, you know, the things they do right, instead of focusing on, oh, well, you know, he's never doing the things I want him to do, kind of thing. But balance out those negative thoughts. Remember the positives. Trying to see the other's perspective and don't judge, right? Maybe, you know, maybe they think that their way is right. You know, maybe they were brought up to... You know, they were never taught about thank you cards. I was never taught about thank you cards. My mom never taught me these things, you know. No, really. So try to see the other person's perspective. It's like, okay, well, maybe they don't, you know, they don't agree with my shoulds. Okay. I'm gonna skip over that and do this exercise that we don't have much time to do. But, copies are there? Let's see if there's enough. Actually, yeah, go ahead. I was going to say. So, what? I'm missing something. You shouldn't eat in the Gompa. Just kidding. Just joking. So page 3, I want to do this exercise on page 3. Did everybody get a copy? Okay. So here on this, in this exercise, I want us to pick like 3 or 4 instances when we've been angry. Some of the stronger intensity, not just the like the little irritation that goes away, but one of the stronger instances of anger, you know, either from our anger log or sometime from in our life. And then for each of them, you know, identify, well, fill out this table, but identify what was the need or the desire underneath the anger, the irritation. You know, I was needing attention. I was needing, you know, to be appreciated or something. And then lastly, in the last column, fill out possible solutions, other solutions to meet the desires besides getting angry and, you know, yelling at them. So the first row, I put an example, and so we'll spend a few minutes doing this.